Welcome to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I get to be Mrs. Derek Gilbert. I love getting to say that. And we want to welcome you to the second of our blather shows, where we get to talk a lot and answer your questions. And they are really good questions. It made choosing them very difficult.
It did. But we are delighted to spend some time in our library here and tackling these questions. And clearly, it's going to take us more time to answer these questions than we had realized.
Oh, yeah. Well,
almost like my dad said, when you ask Derek for the time, he tells you how to build a watch. So I think that might be part of our problem right there.
But some of these questions, that answering them in just 2 minutes is very, very difficult.
And not really fair either, because questions are really, really important, like the nature of fallen angels and demons and what is their relationship to one another. And
Oh, man. So trust me, the questions that we don't get to answer this time, we will answer another time. We'll try very hard to answer your questions. You can send your question to bgm@skywatchtv.com, and we'll add it to our growing list of excellent questions.
Oh, yes.
So last week, we were discussing the angels after the flood.
Right. Viewer Nick had sent us a question asking who those entities were.
Excellent questions.
Thank you. And what the difference was between those entities, because we know that there were some rebellious angels called watchers in the book of Enoch who were punished, according to Peter and Jude, the angels who sinned, sent down to the abyss. And according to Peter, 2 Peter 2, verse 4, the underlying Greek tells us that they were sent to Tartarus, not to Hades, not to Sheol, not to Gehenna, but to Tartarus, a special place called the bottomless pit in the New Testament, where those entities will get out and get 5 months at the end, just leading up to Armageddon, to torment anyone without the seal of God in their forehead.
You mentioned last week, and I'm guessing that some of you were asking yourselves the same question. You mentioned last week that Tartarus is the same as the abyss.
Yes. This was the understanding of the early church, the understanding of the apostles as well. In the Greek cosmology, Tartarus is where Zeus and the Olympians, after they overthrew Kronos and the Titans, imprisoned the Titans. There are some stories that also put the chaos monster Typhon, which is the Greek equivalent of Leviathan, in Tartarus as well. So, it was a pit that was, again, in the Greek mind, as far below Hades as the earth is below heaven. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's so far down, you can't see the bottom. Drop an anvil, it'll take, you know, days and days to get down to the bottom. That's where the gods who sinned were imprisoned. The Jews knew what the Greeks believed. The early church knew what the Greeks and Romans believed. But they understood that their gods weren't imaginary. They were real, but they were fallen angels.
The pagan gods.
The pagan gods, right. And when we use that term, that word, gods, we're not espousing a polytheistic worldview. We've discussed this before. It is simply a term that means a denizen of the spirit realm. That's what the word Elohim, small e Elohim, in Hebrew means. There's only one capital E Elohim, that is Yahweh, God.
Or capital G God.
And one capital G God. But we English speakers, because we've been taught that there is only one God and all of the rest of them are imaginary, that's not consistent with what God in the Old Testament says about gods.
Let me just explain for a minute. A pantheon consists of a lot of small g gods that are all equal, but they have a leader. But their powers are relatively equal.
Mm-hmm.
The true divine council that Mike Heiser talks about in heaven is made up of Yahweh, the creator God, who is without beginning, without ending, and all of those beings that he created to be part of his court or his council.
Right.
So some of those beings that live up there were sent here after the flood.
After the flood.
To watch after those silly humans who no longer were able to speak one
language.
It actually
was after the Tower of Babel incident.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
In Deuteronomy 32, where Moses is essentially, that chapter is the Song of Moses, where he's sort of recounting the history of Israel to the Israelites before they cross the Jordan to go into the Promised Land. And he tells them when God divided the nations, which of course was when he confused the languages mm-hmm. after Babel. He numbered them according to the number of the sons of God.
Right.
And that just means that for every nation other than Israel, there was one of these lesser Elohim, these mm-hmm. small g gods placed over the nations. And we see that also in Deuteronomy 4, verse 19, where Moses is warned or told to warn the Israelites not to fall into the worship of the sun or the moon or the host of heaven, things that God has allotted to the nations for their inheritance. Mm-hmm. So these entities were supposed to essentially administer the earth after God said at the Tower of Babel, which was an attempt to build a portal, if you will, an attempt to bring the small g gods back down to earth, to humanity.
Bring them out of Tartarus.
Or to bring them out of Tartarus, yes. God said, okay, well, look, essentially, and we're paraphrasing, of course, because none of this is not explicit in Scripture, but it appears that God's reaction was, okay, be careful what you've asked for, because you're not going to like this. Mm. So that's when he delegated these lesser Elohim. But then in Psalm 82, where we see the phrase, the divine council, God takes his place in the midst of the divine council, in the midst of the gods, he passes judgment.
In the midst of the Elohim.
Yes, and he tells them, he condemns them for ruling unjustly. Though you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you, like men you shall die and fall like any prince. So God, capital G, God, calls them gods in the Bible. You know, we also see that in mm-hmm. Exodus 12:12, where he tells Moses what's going to happen on the night of the Passover, and says, on that night, I will execute judgment on all the gods of Egypt.
Right. Again, we are not saying there is a pantheon.
No.
There is one creator God, that is it. But he's created beings that are far more powerful than we are. And he sent them down in antiquity to look after the post-Babel human beings.
Right.
Well, these they turned into fallen angels.
That's right. That's right. And so, Nick, when he asked us the question, who are these principalities and powers that we are fighting against? That's a reference to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against mm-hmm. powers, against the cosmic rulers over this present darkness. Yes, many of them are fallen angels, but some of the gods worshipped by the pagans were also demons. Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 20, I imply that what pagans sacrifice, they offer to demons and not to God.
Right.
And as we documented in our book, Veneration, we know that the Amorites or the Canaanites around ancient Israel venerated what they thought were the spirits of their ancestors and the spirits of their long-dead kings, who mm-hmm. they called Rephaim. Yes, the neighbors of Israel knew who the Rephaim were, and they actually had a temple to the Rephaim at that ancient kingdom of Ugarit. But in fact, those were demons.
Yes. Now, who are the demons? These are the spirits of the giants from the pre-flood era, the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
Their bodies died,
right,
but their spirits were allowed to remain on earth.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we know that this is not the default teaching in Bible seminaries today. Bible colleges don't teach this. But this was the understanding of the early church for the first four centuries after the resurrection. It was the understanding of the Jews of Jesus' day. It was the understanding in the Old Testament. When we start digging into the Hebrew, as we learned when we researched veneration, many times in the Old Testament where you see the word dead or departed or shades, the actual Hebrew word is Rephaim.
Mm-hmm.
Their pagan neighbors knew and venerated the Rephaim. They also venerated what they thought were their ancestors, and that's a practice that continues to this day, offering little, you know, gifts to ancestors on a little household shrine. That happens all over the world to this day. But this was going on 4,000 years ago, more than 4,000 years ago in ancient Mesopotamia.
They were believing lies.
They were. But according to the Book of Enoch, spirits of the giants were not allowed into the traditional place for the dead mm-hmm. or into heaven because they were neither fully human or fully divine.
Yes, and I would argue that a similar lie is taking place today, that we have been, throughout the centuries, we see individuals who believe that they have seen a dead ancestor, a loved one. They see what they call a ghost. Well, I'm not going to totally discount the possibility, but Scripture seems to imply that once you have died, then you go to be with the Lord. You go to your judgment.
Right,
you
right.
go. You don't come back. And in fact, the rich man
mm-hmm.
who is in torments and he sees Lazarus over in the bosom of Abraham, whom he, you know, sort of didn't care a hoot about when he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
The rich man asks if he can go back and tell his brothers. He would be going back in a spirit way and back in a ghost. Nope, sorry, they didn't believe the prophets, and they're not going to believe you.
No, that's true. Now, there is one example in the Bible where the spirit of a human does return.
Yes, but it actually was sent by the Lord.
Sent by the Lord. And this was a special dispensation where the spirit of Samuel, and interestingly, in that account, this is King Saul going to visit the medium of Endor the night before he fell in battle against the Philistines. When Samuel emerged from the earth, first of all, she was shocked because the scripture tells us she cried out with a loud voice, but...
because she thought it was going to be a faker.
Her familiar spirit,
yes,
right.
Yes, exactly.
But his spirit is called an Elohim. I see a God rising from the earth, an Elohim rising from the earth, and it was the spirit of Samuel.
Because he now resides in the realm of the Elohim.
Exactly. So,
it's like saying you're from Chicago. Now you go to live in Chicago, you're Chicagoite.
Exactly. But there are accounts, and the late Chris Putnam documented this in his book, The Supernatural Worldview, of people receiving what appear to be, and there's really no other explanation for it, messages from the spirit realm that warned them of impending danger or pointed to, in one case, to the rescue of a small boy whose mother had had a traffic accident on a tragic accident
yes.
on a very treacherous stretch of road. But again, the point is that this is all allowed, if allowed by God.
And that's why I say I don't discount
right.
that the Lord
yes.
will allow it at sometimes. But I think that most of these ghosts and apparitions are actually the fallen realm demons who are lying to us.
And that's why John wrote that we are to test the spirits because not all are from God.
Exactly. Well, that was a great question. We're going to take a really quick break and then come back and talk about some news stories.
Oh, yes. Don't go away. The Bible's greatest mysteries continues.
And take advantage of SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year. With the rediscovery of the ancient prophecies from a mysterious group of prophets and scribes hundreds of years before Christ, your understanding of end times prophecy and the final age of man is about to be forever changed. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, the veil is lifted as you discover how much of what you've been taught about Israel in the first century is incomplete. Shockingly, there were Jewish believers who knew exactly what to expect from the coming Messiah. That he would be God in the flesh, would die for our sins, and even the date of his first arrival. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, you will discover lost prophecies only recently discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls about the time we are now living in, how the enigmatic group known as the Essenes formed and what influence they had on the New Testament, what hidden feasts and festivals the Essenes celebrated, and what messages the group left behind for believers living in the present age, how the prophecies of Daniel and Revelation fit within the Essene timetable, and how an ancient Jewish calendar actually predicts the prophetic significance of the year 2025. But that's not all. For the first time ever, you'll also receive Dr. Ken Johnson's massive three-book collection entitled The Ancient Mysteries of the Essenes, where Dr. Johnson compiles three of his most groundbreaking research studies on the Dead Sea Scrolls into one massive collection. In Book 1, The Ancient Dead Sea Scrolls Calendar and the Prophecies It Reveals, you will discover the secrets of the mysterious 364-day calendar used by the ancients since the time of creation and how it has been hidden until now for the appointed time. In Book 2, Ancient Testimonies of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls, you will hear the previously hidden prophetic texts of such patriarchs as Enos, grandson of Adam, Lamech, father of Noah, Amram, father of Moses and Aaron, and even Enoch from the Book of Enoch fame. And in the most shocking revelation yet, Book 3, The Ancient Order of Melchizedek, you will learn astonishing facts about the enigmatic priest Melchizedek, such as why his priesthood was and is different from that of Levi, why the Messiah was ordained after the order of Melchizedek, and how the facts surrounding this mysterious order dramatically affect the theology and practical applications of our Christian walk today. This collection is an absolute necessity for any researcher's library and for those who want to fully step into the minds of the ancients and see the Dead Sea Scrolls like they never have before. Now you can get this incredible collection for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So don't miss out on SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year, the Lost Prophecies and Ancient Mysteries Collection, available now at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
The Bible's Greatest Mysteries is part of SkyWatch TV. Every show is available on demand at the SkyWatch TV app for Roku, Apple TV, and our free mobile app.
Welcome back to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from SkyWatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and you know, Tom has sent us some great news articles, and I think that one or two of them we could end up spending the rest of our time on, actually, because you and I talked about it briefly when we saw the story, too.
Mm-hmm.
And let me get my iPad to rotate here. You and I were actually looking at, do you remember in Christmas, well, you wrote about it, Christmas of 2020?
Yes.
Everybody was talking about the Christmas star, the Christmas star. Well, of course, it wasn't the Christmas star at all. But it was being portrayed as the Christmas star. And you wrote in The Second Coming of Saturn why you think that was, why they did that.
I think it was to get Christians looking at that conjunction as something very significant and special. And of course, you know, if they can get Christians to believe that the Christmas star seen by the wise men, which was had to be something supernatural, because the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter in the night sky was interesting, seeing these two relatively bright points of light in the night sky, not enough to make me, if it was me, you know, 2,000 years ago, get on a camel and spend 3 months crossing the desert.
Plus, the star was behind them.
Well, yes, the star rose in the east, and so the sign was, the conjunction would have been in the wrong direction if they were coming from Persia. Anyway, the point is that what they saw was something supernatural. What we saw in the night sky on the Christmas or on the winter solstice of 2020 was an interesting astronomical event, and that's it.
Oh, exactly. But we saw a similar story in December of last year, 2021.
Yeah, where they were calling the star Sirius the Christmas star. And I think this has some occult connotations.
Both I do too.
The 2020 conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn and the 2021 appearance of Sirius in the night sky. The reason for 2020, Jupiter and Saturn met at 0 degrees of the constellation Aquarius, which means we are now officially in the age of Aquarius. Now, we understand the movements of the planets in the night sky don't have anything to do with our futures, our destinies, our how we feel on any given day, none of that.
But the pagan realm want humans to believe that.
Right. And the reason that was significant as far as the pagans are concerned is that Saturn rules the constellation Aquarius, and that signals a return to rules and order and austerity and decentralization of power and less emphasis on material things. In other words, they're basically saying this is the time for the Great Reset.
Yes, that's exactly what they're saying. If you have not yet purchased a copy of the Second Coming of Saturn, Derek's new book, oh, boy, do you get into some stuff in that is just going to, it will blow your mind. Head explode.
Well, Saturn was very important in the ancient Roman world. It's interesting that
you even pull in America and Washington, D.C.
Well, I give you credit for that because you pointed me in that direction. But that's in many ways based on the research that Tom Horn did for his groundbreaking books.
Absolutely.
Apollyon Rising 2012.
Zena 2016. Zeitgeist 2025.
Right,
yes.
Right. So much of that comes from that research. But
The fact that the Aquarius Age began in the a whole area of the sky that has to do with the cupbearer of Zeus.
Yeah, there's a
Ganymede.
Lot of stuff in there, and we really don't have time to unpack that.
Because Aquarius is also called Ganymede.
Yes, and
let's just put it this way. Some uncomfortable stuff.
Yeah, the occult symbolism embedded in the architecture of Washington, D.C. in general and the United States Capitol in particular is pointing to what pagans believe is the return of a golden age, mm-hmm. which was the age they thought was ruled by Saturn or Kronos.
Yes.
When life was easy and the gods were kindly and, you know, we didn't have to work. In other words, a return to the pre-flood era. And the Roman poet Virgil put it this way, returns old Saturn's reign with a new breed of men sent down from heaven. Well,
whoa.
That's the pre-flood era, and that breed of men sent down from heaven, they really messed us up.
Oh, they really did. Well, you were saying that Sirius, mm-hmm. which is the brightest star in the sky, we're told.
Right.
The dog star, sometimes it's called, that it has occult connotations.
It does. Josh Peck and I, and of course Josh did the wonderful documentary on the UFO disclosure movement called The Great Delusion. Mm-hmm. We wrote a book back in 2017 on UFO disclosure. It's a subject that you and I and Josh have all had. In fact, the three of us spent the 70th anniversary UFO festival down in Roswell.
Yeah, we did.
For Tom Horn doing research down there. And
it wasn't very scientific, was it?
No, there were a lot of people there who were on essentially religious quests. Mm. The UFO movement is about getting answers that are in the Bible.
It's about a religion.
It is. It mm-hmm. is. So we wrote the book, The Day the Earth Stands Still, and we found that in the research for the book, not only did we connect the dots showing that the modern concept of ancient aliens, the idea that the gods of ancient Mesopotamia were just space travelers from the planet Nibiru, actually comes from the occult teachings of Helena Blavatsky and Aleister Crowley, mm-hmm. filtered through the horror fiction of H.P. Lovecraft, whose work was essentially cribbed and repackaged by Eric von Daniken and Zechariah Sitchin. So you can see that it's really based in theosophy, which is an occult teaching from the late 19th century, sold as horror fiction by H.P. Lovecraft and a number of similar authors, and then that repackaged as pseudo-astronomy, pseudo-archaeology by the likes of von Daniken and Sitchin. But one of Aleister Crowley's followers, in fact, it was his personal secretary, Kenneth Grant, took Crowley's occult system and adapted it. He believed that, according to Grant, he detected a set Sirius current in the work of Crowley, set being the Egyptian chaos monster,
yes.
chaos god,
mm-hmm.
the Egyptian equivalent of Leviathan, basically. And believed that this chaos entity was coming back to Earth from the vicinity of the planet Sirius. And so the strain of magic that Grant popularized, developed from Crowley, is now being practiced around the world as something called chaos magic. And that is, I know it's an oxymoron of the highest degree. How do you develop a system to control chaos? Chaos has no system.
It's an oxymoron.
It is an oxymoron. But yet there are people who are trying to do this. They're trying to figure out the right spells to control chaos so that they will be able to control chaos when it returns. Leviathan, Set, Typhon. It's different names for the same entity. Tiamat to the Sumerians. It is nonsensical, but it is really, really curious that the two main entities that are organizations that are trying to make contact with extraterrestrials, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is Dr. Stephen Greer's organization, mm-hmm. and the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence are both called SETI.
Yeah.
SETI and CSETI. But Set was, again, the name of the Egyptian chaos monster. SETI means man of Set. So these two organizations reaching out to the stars to try to contact extraterrestrial life are both named Man of the Chaos God.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
No. So
you really don't.
It is really, really odd.
Here is a very interesting story that sort of goes along with what you have been writing about in The Second Coming of Saturn. Beyond the Pillars of Hercules, megalithic people of Kronos reaching America.
The people of Kronos.
The people of Kronos.
Story.
Well, you know, if you look at the ancient maps, according to this story, and it came out in December of last year, and I'm glad that Tom hung on to this because it's really interesting. There's an area that we call the Adriatic Sea that was called the Kronos Sea.
Oh, well, Kronos, according to some of the myths, even though he was confined in the netherworld, in some of the stories, he was eventually let out and went off to the west, where he now resides over a land where the virtuous pagans are allowed to roam, and he just lies there dreaming and dreaming prophetic dreams.
Well, you were talking about Set. This is connected, believe it or not. According to Diodorus Siculus, who is a Greek historian around 80 to 20 BC, he wrote in his Library of History that Kronos was the father of Osiris.
Huh.
And that Osiris went roaming around the world to see where people might live and who was living there. And that the thinking is that somehow there's a connection between Kronos and the establishment of various civilizations. And that these travelers, and you and I have talked about Greeks actually reaching it to North America before, that somehow there's a connection between a North American exploration and the stories of Atlantis.
Hmm. That is really curious. I have not done a deep study of the Egyptian religion, Egyptian cosmology, but for Kronos to be equated, to be identified as the father of Osiris, I would have equated those two because both of them, you know, Osiris being the lord of the dead.
The lord of the dead,
and
exactly.
In the underworld.
Yeah, I would have also.
Yeah, but there was a word in Egyptian that was referred to, that was used for Osiris, that Isaiah borrowed in Isaiah chapter 14. It's translated into Hebrew.
We're running out of time again.
Oh, yeah, well, with less than a minute on the clock, there's no way we can get into that, but we will definitely address this when we next pick up with your questions. And until then, you know, that second coming of Saturn, I get into all of that in there, including the Egyptian loanwords in the book of Isaiah.
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Michael Heiser is going to be around for the next few weeks.
Oh,
so
yes.
You want to come back next
week.
Oh,
yeah. You want to know about the Divine Council? Be here for that. 4 weeks with Dr. Michael Heiser as he untangles the Bible's greatest mysteries.